All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, here for a solo interview episode. John and Chuck will be back later this week for a holiday episode for you guys. My guest today is Peter Edmondson, host of Locked On Grizzlies, so I get to talk all about the Grizzlies. Man, I could talk about the Grizzlies for a long time. We only, you know, we went a little bit long, but I did my best on restraining myself. But I hope you will listen. Peter gives some interesting insight into the possible Tony Allen trade rumors and some stories of Grizzlies past. So I hope you will stick around for that. But before we get there, I want to tell you guys about the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. Our friends on the Step Back Network, Rich and Jason, do a great job of illuminating NBA and ABA history by telling great stories and uncovering interesting facts and stats from professional basketball's history. So if you're like me and you don't know as much about the NBA as maybe you should before, you know, say the Bad Boy era Pistons is where my information really starts. So go to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast and subscribe and listen and enjoy it. Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. My guest today is a contributor for the Memphis Commercial Appeal, where he covers the Grizzlies. He is the host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast and also the radio host of Wolo and Peter in the morning. Is it in the morning? I think it's in the morning in Memphis, Tennessee.
It's in the morning, sure.
Great. Mr. Peter Edmondson, how are you doing?
I am good, Keith. How are you, buddy?
Man, I'm great and happy to have you on. I really enjoy your Locked On podcast. There's, as our listeners know, Locked On for everything. The only one I listen to pretty much every day is the Grizzlies one, and it's really good. I gotta say, I guess I consider myself a podcast snob, and when like the Locked On Grizzlies was announced, I was like, I hope this is one of the good ones. I hope it's not one of the ones I can't recommend. But no, you do a really good job. You know, you get the audio clips of the players, which I enjoy, and you know, it's very concise and it gives me all my straight shot of Grizzlies information without having to like scrub through local radio shows. No offense, local
radio
shows.
That's what I'm hoping. That's more or less what I'm hoping to give you. I mean, like, you know, you are a much more of a veteran of the podcast game than I am. A lot of people, you know, I think. A lot of people kind of think that, you know, and I certainly, you know, wasn't sure, having never done a podcast on a regular basis before. I didn't really understand, and I still don't really understand exactly what I'm doing. But it's really different. It's different than doing radio. Yeah, I've done radio for, well, I don't know, 13 years now. And it's just different because the timing is different. The content is a little bit different. The energy level's different because you're doing it. You know, typically, you know, unless you have a lot of money, you're doing it in your own little studio at home, or, you know, on your computer with a little mic plugged in or whatever. So you know, getting the energy level, like when I'm doing the radio show, we've got mics, we got the studio set up, we got phones, we got techs, we got this, we got that, producers, all that stuff. So, you know, you get a lot of energy because you're just it feels like you're doing stuff and it feels like stuff's happening. You know, on a podcast, it's a whole thing where you got to really generate all that on your own, and trying to do that and pace it and figure out the right way. It's still a work in progress. I always encourage, and you've been very kind with your feedback. And I encourage anybody that's listening, if you like it, but you want, you know, you just have some anything constructive criticism, all that's great. Cause I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I will always appreciate anybody helping me, make the thing better.
Well, no, I think you do a great job. And again, one of the things that I think was different than podcasting and radio is, I know, like, I have co-hosts on my normal show. Like, I do these interviews one-on-one, but normally the few times I've ever tried to podcast solo for 2 minutes, I can't do it. Like, it's a complete disaster. Like, I hit start and stop, and then I try to cut it together. And then I'm like, I'm in awe of the national radio guys, and just, or any radio guy who has that solo show, who can just talk and not sound like a blabbering
idiot.
Yeah,
it's hard to do, man. You have to get yourself used to it. And it used to be, you know, when I was first starting out, it was really a little scary to do it. But you know, once you kind of figure out that aspect of it, you know, the problem, like, okay, so, you know, the problem really from a podcast perspective is I want Locked On Grizzlies, as you describe it. I think that's exactly what I want. I want it to be compelling. I want it to be a one-stop shop. You can get all your Grizzlies info relatively quickly. I try to make it between 20 and 40 minutes, maybe a little longer if there's an interview or something like that. But that's the gist of what I want to do with it. But, you know, my problem is that I can typically go on and on about a topic pretty easily. And I need someone to edit me. You know, that's where my producers on radio are helpful, because they can kind of say, all right, shut up. Yeah, we got it. We get the point.
Right.
And I can just blather on forever if I don't watch myself. So I have to be very careful doing the podcast, since there's nothing out there that really like would stop me other than myself. And that's never a good idea. So, you know, that's me learning, like, all right, okay, you know, don't belabor the point. Let's move on. And that'll be a process of me, you know, doing it more quickly. But I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate everybody. You know, we've had some really good growth on the podcast. It's been very steady, which I appreciate, and had a lot of good feedback on it. It's a lot more time consuming than I thought it would be, but I'm enjoying doing it. Got like some good stuff coming this week with got a localized CBA talk with Matt Herdlick. We really get into some of the details of what it will mean for the Grizzlies on the new collective bargaining agreement specifically, which is good. I've got coming out Tuesday, so whenever this is out, I don't know, but on Tuesday, I've got a nice chat that I did with Mike Conley. On Monday, we talked for 5-10 minutes about the state of his return. I've got some good stuff with Chandler Parsons coming as well. Talk to him. Like a lot of that good stuff should be on the way here in the next week or so.
Sounds good. We'll try not to overlap too much with that. I'm curious, with your podcasting and with your morning radio show, what is your daily routine? Like, having a morning show and then having to go to Grizzlies games, and I assume you're potting after the games most of the time.
Yeah, that's how it works. I mean, I'm typically a night owl. I mean, I get up pretty early in the morning anyway, because I've got young kids. So I'm up regardless. You know, weekends, there's no weekends or anything like that. You know, between me and my wife, you know, one of us will give the other one day a week to sleep in. But otherwise, it's pretty much you're up, you know, ASAP before light most of the time. So get up, take care of the kids, and get them off and get ready for school. Or daycare, go do the show. Then after that, it depends on the day. Like today, I was at Grizzly practice. Some days I'll be, you know, doing all kinds of different things. Hopefully, if I can, I like to try to work in a little power nap in the afternoon. That's great. And then go get the kids and do dad stuff for a while, or go to a Grizzly game. And then, yeah, I usually tape the pod. I haven't even taped Tuesday's pod yet, as we tape this, you know, fairly late at night. So I tape probably at 11 o'clock or later, and edit it pretty quick and get it up, hopefully, so people can have it ready to go in their morning routine at some point. I like it for it to be in their podcast manager, whatever program they use, you know, in the morning, so they can listen to it at their leisure throughout their day. It's just nice to have, because I know I'm a big podcast listener myself, so I like to have my stable of podcasts that I'm ready to listen to. I like to have it, you know, in the morning. I like for it to have been downloaded, so I can go and whatever I need to run, go do this, go do that. It's already in there. So that's the goal.
Right.
And if it all works out, that's the way it goes.
In all of that, and then between getting to your actual radio job, do you ever have, and this is very important for our listeners, do you carve out a time for breakfast?
You know, I wish I on weekends we do, but on weekdays, not really. My breakfast is an apple, preferably Honeycrisp. Although, you know, that's a price, you know, they get very expensive depending on, you know, availability, season, all that, you know, but it's so good. It's the best damn apple out there for sure. I'm very much an apple aficionado. So Honeycrisp, top of the list. It's gotta be a Honeycrisp, or, you know, failing that, I'm trying a Pacific Rose right now, and it's okay, but it's not where I need it to be. Sweet Tango's fine. You know, Pink Lady will do in a pinch. Like, I'm okay with that.
I want to say you're the third guest I've had on here who has gone deep on apples. And I'm not an apple connoisseur, and they just start throwing out all these apple names, and I'm like, is that Like, is that a recipe or is that a, no, that's just the apple's name. And yeah, so
you got it. You got to get, well, this is the, see, I think if people, I mean, if our listeners here, if you like apples, great. But if you haven't really, you know, gone deep on the type of apples, don't realize how much variation there. It's crazy. You know, if you think that apples are just that mealy red piece of garbage that you get, you know, out there sitting in the little basket, like at the grocery store, like in the gas station or whatever, the world is just going to open up. Your mind is just going to go when you realize the different textures that are involved and the different flavors.
I don't know if I'm ready.
I don't know if you are either, Keith. Honestly, here, listening to you, I don't think you are.
I feel like
you need to steal yourself.
I feel like my apple analysis, I'm only ready to go so far as like points per game. Like any other stat I can't handle. Like, don't tell me per 36.
Go
like,
advanced.
Oh, per possession?
Yeah,
like, I can't.
You got to get deep into it. You got to get there. It's because it's the apple world is a very wide world, and you got to get down into it. Do you want tart? Do you want sweet? How crisp do you want it? All that stuff. I mean, you got to get real.
We'll have to have you back with, I'll try to get a couple apple experts together and we can go over.
Do you like
some
apples?
Stuff.
Do you like apples, Keith?
No, they're totally indifferent to them. But again, I couldn't tell you. No one ever told me what an apple was.
You would know if you had a Honeycrisp.
I have never ordered an apple by name. I can tell you that right now.
Don't order it. Just go to the damn grocery store. They've got huge selections wherever you are. They got huge selections of apples here, there, everywhere. Just start with a good Honeycrisp and go from there. And I swear by them, it's the Rolls Royce of apples. You're going
to
love it.
I'm going to do it. Next Grizzlies game I go to, I'm going to give you a heads up, and I'm going to ask for you to have a Honeycrisp ready for me.
I'm telling you, you go to the grocery store, right?
No, you're not going to get me to go to the grocery store. No, I'm not going to do it.
You don't ever go to the grocery store?
No, I do. I have to shop.
How do you get your food? I'm worried about you, Keith.
Man, you just order off the internet. I just tell Siri what I want to eat, and it shows up.
That's true. Tell Siri, have whoever's doing your grocery shopping for you, because apparently your podcast game is so lucrative that you've got people doing your shopping for you.
No
so
question.
Apparently, have your people go get you a Honeycrisp. You'll love it.
I'm going to do it. All right, let's move to the Grizzlies, the team that you cover, the team that I cheer for. The Grizzlies this season have confounded me a little bit. They've been winning a lot of close games. Then Mike Conley went out, and they kept winning close games. And then they had a big blowout against the Warriors that kind of made all the bad close wins feel better retroactively. And then Mike Conley came back, and then they started losing a couple games. So to you, Peter, at this point of the season, about a third of the season in, do you have a grasp on what the Grizzlies are doing, and or how do you process what you've seen so far?
I mean, I think that's a difficult question for an observer, and because it's so difficult for David Fizdale. You know, I was talking to him earlier this week about that very thing, about how do you, you know, because he's really coached like five or six different teams. You know, it depends on different rotations and what they have health wise. So, you know, the Grizzlies have a real knack for confounding the numbers, all the win projections, the Pythagorean, all that stuff. They always mess that up. So that's just a common thing for the Grizzlies. But you know, when you have these personnel groupings and you don't have Mike Conley and you've got, you know, minutes restrictions on guys, you've got Marc Gasol, who's dealing with the fact that he's healthy and he's fully, but his role, you know, when Mike, now the Mike is back, his role has changed a little bit. That's a different kind of thing for him. Zach Randolph, obviously his role is quite a bit different. The locker room feel is a little bit different. So, you know, how you judge them is really tough, because, you know, you have to kind of project out what you think they're going to be. And if everyone's healthy, they're this, but is everyone going to be healthy? Is that ever something that you can aspire to? You know, at some point this week, Chandler Parsons is going to return, but then you've got to start the clock on his recovery. You got to start the clock on, you know, him getting that rust out. And look at Mike Conley's first few games back. I mean, brutal rust all over the place. And now you add another rusty guy in Chandler Parsons. So can they play the requisite 2-3 weeks to get themselves fully healthy and to get that chemistry back. And then we can see what they look like. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. So yeah, they confound everybody, including themselves, but that's not unusual for this team.
Yeah. Do you take a positive spin or a negative spin to Sunday's game? Like Mike and Mark were both terrible. They shot under 30%. They were 2 for 23 from three against the Jazz, but they were still in the game. So is that like, do you see as a glass half full or a glass half empty?
Yeah, I think it's the glass is half full, you know, in the sense that if your two best guys, you know, can go, you know, 7 for 38, and you can still be right there, you know, until the very end, that's generally a positive thing. But, you know, the problem comes in and how do you run your offense? The problem comes in, you know, who do you go to? I still think that now Mike coming back, figuring out, you know, how that's going to play out is a little bit tricky. I mean, the Grizzlies have had an unbelievable run of success in clutch situations, as has been widely discussed. I know you guys have talked about it. I've certainly talked about it. It's remarkable, but it's kind of either you would expect a little bit of a regression to the mean on that front. And I think truthfully, the Grizzlies have to some extent bought into their own hype on this, where they play almost kind of okay with not fully taking advantage of everything throughout the course of the game, feeling like they can, you know, pull it out at the end. You know, you've had so many great escapes that you kind of get used to it. I think they're in that mode right now where they've got to be careful that they execute a little bit better long term. The other problem, Keith, is I just don't think execution wise, you know, you watch the last 3 minutes of that game on Sunday and Mark and Mike, they didn't pass the ball to anyone else. No one else touched the ball. And that can be a little problematic when guys don't space properly or when they don't look for them properly or when they don't have the right feel for those situations. And Mark, you know, in that game especially, you know, he was, even though he took 22 shots, he still was a little bit passive in the sense that he wasn't really willing to go after Rudy Gobert. And Gobert really dominated that battle completely. That's, you know, maybe a little worrisome just to figure out what Mark ultimately is going to end up doing.
Yep.
So I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a glass half full or a glass half empty. Honestly, you could see both sides of it. I just know that offensively they got problems.
Do you think the offensive problems? I mean, you mentioned the word rust, and I think Fizdale himself said the word rust, talking about, because you know Conley was obviously having a great start to this season, and then Gasol was excellent. You know, was Western Conference Player of the Year the stretch that Conley was out, and was really, you know, scoring tons of points, grabbing all the rebounds. With him coming back now, do you think they have to kind of just refigure out again how they work together and how each one of them is going to, or who's going to be that, I guess, the alpha on offense?
I mean, that's part of it. Yeah, they're going to have to figure out who's going to be the alpha. But also, a lot of it is timing-based. So much of their offense that they run is really precise stuff because it is half-court based. They're a little more, you know, they've gotten a little more transition this year, but they still play very slowly. They still do a great deal of half-court work. They still are running sets that are designed to get the ball in certain spots at certain times. And although that timing is off a little bit right now, and that's something I actually talked to Mike Conley a lot about, that, you know, they're just really small windows of opportunity for those post passes and for the good looks that the Grizzlies get. And you see the offense, and you've watched enough, Keith, to know you see those possessions where, wow, it looks like it's great. You know, they run that little high low stuff, or they run pick and roll, you know, where Mark pops out, but does he pop or does he flare? Does he go out or does he dive? You know, those are all timing and communication things that have to come. And in at the Utah game, for example, like Mark and Mike weren't on the same page. So they're running pick and roll, but you know, Mike's thinking that Mark's going to dive, Mark flares out or vice versa. And then that's when you get those possessions with the Grizzlies where it's like, all right, and there's 5 seconds left and it just ends up being some, you know, weird turnaround or some crazy shot at the end. And you see that a lot. That's teams have also adjusted. The other thing, teams have adjusted to the way the Grizzlies play now, where they're a little more cognizant of the spacing that the Grizzlies are trying to create. And so they're going to have to earn more of those shots over and over again. The closeout shots on Mark are getting a little more aggressive, but they're also aware that Mark can also penetrate and put the ball on the deck a little bit and play make. So guys are backing off a bit. There are always these little things and these adjustments that are starting to be made. So they're going to have to get more crisp on their offense too. And that's where I'm curious to see if they can kick it up a notch.
With the offense adjusting obviously to this new system that Fizdale's running, and then you've had the players in and out, Conley being out the big one. Now that Vince Carter's back, now that Zach Randolph's back, I'm curious, which players do you hope, when you're watching as a fan, what lineup are you hoping ends the game? Because I can tell you, normally I feel like I have a very strong opinion on this. And so far this year, like in the Celtics, I mean, in the Jazz game on Sunday, I couldn't even decide who I wanted to be out there with Mike and Mark. So I'm curious, who's your optimal five-man lineup right now?
You know, I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, I look at it, you know, not from a fan perspective, because I'm trying to figure out kind of, you know, just evaluating, you know what I mean? Like that's, so it's situational. And I don't know that there's an answer to that question right now, because they have such a varied group. You know, obviously you're going to have Mike and Mark out there. You know, Zach, for example, was out there, and then Utah really started taking advantage of him, spreading him out and his man going out, putting the ball on the deck. It led to, you know, two straight threes. And Fizdale had to take him out for Jermichael Green. And Jermichael Green, you know, if he were just a tad bit better offensively, he would solve a lot of those problems. But he's not making that corner three with the regularity that you would have hoped for. Or, you know, he's not able to be as consistent offensively as it would be. If he could just give you 12, you know,
right,
you'd feel good. But he just can't, on a consistent basis, quite get there. So that makes it tough. You have to choose between Zach and Jermichael. You have to choose between scoring and defense. And I've often said, you may have heard it, that they're just, the Grizzlies historically have had too many one-way players. They have very few truly two-way guys that give it to you on both ends of the court. You know, you've had Tony forever, who is, you know, unbelievable defensively and capable of totally changing a game, but is also can be disastrous on offense. Zach is now the other way around, where he can really do incredible damage at the post, but he can also do incredible damage when you're trying to work around him defensively. So that makes closing lineups really a situational thing and a tough decision for Fizdale to make.
Yep. I think you mentioned that is, I don't know if I enjoy it again as a fan. You can be the analyst, I'll be the fan, as the watching a team where I'm not sure who I want to play every night. You know, like when I'm seeing like,
right,
like Vince has it going, or I'm sitting there being like, you know, Troy Williams, not that I normally want Troy to close, but like, he's really brought a lot of energy in other games, and now he's not really getting to play because these guys are back. And just watching like who's hitting shots tonight, who's feeling it, like is Troy Daniels, is this going to be one of the games that he's on? You know, he seems to be either all the way on or all the way off. One of the fun things I have really enjoyed so far this season with Fizdale, and maybe it is because of the injuries, but I mean, he started on opening night, was playing the rookies. And I asked this question on Twitter a month ago, and I'm curious what your take is. Who do you think is going to have the best NBA career of those rookies who are getting playing time between Andrew Harrison, Deonte Davis, Wade Baldwin, and Troy Williams?
What was the response from the people?
Well, I will tell you that the people responded, and I think I asked this question after the second Miami game where Troy Williams had a really good game,
right,
but the people responded 42% Deonte Davis, 23% Troy Williams, 22% Wade Baldwin, 13% Andrew Harrison.
I think I'm with the people pretty much. I think I'm with the people on that one. Deonte Davis is definitely was my answer to the question. I would order it slightly differently. I think it's Deonte 1 and Baldwin 2, Troy Williams 3 and Andrew Harrison 4. Deonte, I think, has the easiest path as long as his foot. I'm starting to get a little concerned about the foot because it's now multiple plantar fascia issues that he's had. And while it's probably a blessing actually that he tore it this time, because that tends to at least allow for a clean healing process. Takes a little longer, but you can pretty well start fresh. You know, there have been guys in the past like Udonis Haslem who had repeated strains and had actually he had them surgically tear it
right
to start over. So that's like, you know, you hope that ends. As long as that ends it, his development, his path to development is right there, because, you know, he's got a couple jobs that he needs to do, and he can go and be a rim runner and be a shot blocker. And that's, you know, if he does those two things, just those, he will be a player that the Grizzlies haven't had before, really. To any major level, you can, I guess, Stromile Swift maybe, but Stro's not even that type of player. There just hasn't been that guy. So I think if he is those two things at a high level, which I think he can be, then that instantly vaults him to a very key spot, you know, historically for the Grizzlies, and allows them to play a much more of a traditional, or what's becoming a traditional stretch kind of guy alongside of him, because he can make up for a lot of those mistakes. As far as Baldwin goes, I still think he's got tremendous athletic potential. I mean, off the charts athletic potential, you know, great length, great, possibly, you know, disruptive defensive, you know, ideas. And he's got great hands. You can really tell that when you watch him up close. He's got great reflexes, great hands, but he can't play basketball right now. So it's really hard to determine, you know, what he's going to do as a point guard when he can't actually play the game at the moment, and it's all going way too fast for him.
That's really funny you said that, because one of my takes on when I first saw Wade Baldwin play, and I don't watch college basketball, and I first saw him play in Las Vegas, and like I told people, like, oh, has this guy played basketball before? Because I'm not seeing that he knows what he's doing, like he's doing out there. But
so with him, and then I think Troy Williams is a guy that, like, I mean, I don't know how high his ceiling is overall as a player, but he's already, you know, he finishes the basket really well for a rookie. He's very athletically springy, and he's quick twitch, which is nice. You know, I don't think he's the most intelligent basketball player out there, but he can make up for some of that with the, you know, amount of energy that he can give you. And, you know, he plays a position. He has 6'7", length, can defend multiple spots. Those are always valuable guys. These days, you can really never have enough 6'7", to 6'9", guys that can play, you know, 2-3, defend all the way out to even a small 4, depending on what the lineups look like. He could do that. He couldn't transition. Like I said, I don't think he's ever going to be a starter or anything like that on a regular basis, but I think he could be a 8th-9th guy, which is not bad. You could use that. And I just don't rate Andrew Harrison very highly. So I'm maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask that question on with Harrison, but I you know, I think he's big, which is good, and he's tough, but he is not a good defender. He looks like he kind of fools you with the eye test sometimes, but he's just not a good defender. He's not fast. He's not fast mentally. He slows things down on the offensive end. He's not a shooter. He makes bad decisions. You know, all those things. And he's a rookie, so clearly some of that can get better. And he's shown a lot of moxie, and he's been a lot more effective than I thought he ever would be. I just don't think long term you're going to see much growth out of him. And so he's far and away the last one for me.
So far, I think on the season, I was expecting so little from Andrew Harrison that I'm still kind of secretly pleased. Even though I watch him.
Oh, you should be pleased.
You know, even though where I'm like, wow, he really can't hit a shot. And, oh, why did he shoot that and not pass it to the next guy who was willing? Oh, you know, but still, I'm still so surprised where I'm like, he's just like a terrible Nick Calathes right now, and maybe he'll get better. So, like,
well,
you know.
I mean, you know, he's doing a lot. I mean, he's actually, you know, in some ways been, you know, more effective than Calathes. And it's weird because, you know, he's definitely got that kind of game, that big, slow point guard kind of game where it's annoying sometimes to watch. But if you're a fan, I think you should be absolutely thrilled that you've been able to be so productive as a team with him leading the way for the most part. I mean, he's done remarkably well just being able to lead the team on the floor, and those guys, they will play with him, and I think he frustrates them a little bit, but they're, you know, they got his back. He's a tough kid. So all that stuff matters. And I'm not knocking him for that. I'm not saying, like, I mean, he's earned the right to play. It's just that if you're asking me, like, you know, for their career and long-term, I just don't rate him very highly in that regard.
Moving on to the biggest, for me, it was the biggest news. Tony Allen's probably my favorite basketball player. He's become, I think, maybe my favorite all-time basketball player in the last few years. Yep. So Ron Tillery with the Commercial Appeal, your colleague, reported that the Grizzlies were listening to offers for Tony Allen?
And yeah. They were teams were inquiring about Tony, and the Grizzlies were not rebuffing those offers, I guess is the best way to kind of phrase it.
So do you have any more light to shed on that? Is this just Dave Yeager asking if he'll come to Sacramento, or is it plural? Are there teams who have inquired?
Yeah, I can tell you that it is teams with an S. Now, as far as any more light to shed, I cannot, you know, that's Ron's deal. If Ron has any more light, he'll share it with all of us. So I don't have anything that he's, you know, I don't have any private line or anything like that. But I mean, I think it was interesting to see. And I mean, you have to, you know, if you divorce yourself from the fandom, which is hard to do.
I'm not a robot.
You know, you're not a robot, and you're not a member of the front office, but those guys, you know, they have to look, and you're talking about a guy that's going to be 35, you know, with bulky knees and final year of his contract, and, you know, giving you inconsistent. I mean, he's been excellent for the last 3 weeks, but before that he wasn't. And, you know, so if you can get something for him, I mean, if his name was, you know, Tony Johnson, and he wasn't the grindfather, he was just some guy, you'd say, oh, this is great. If you can get anything for him, that'd be terrific. But, you know, the mystique and the cult following and all that, then that complicates things a little bit.
Yeah, I'm curious what, in effect, an NBA team would offer for him, like what they would value. Because if I'm the Grizzlies and a team says, hey, we'll give you a second round pick for Tony Allen, there's no way you don't look at him as this is just another random player. Like you can't trade, you know, the grindfather. I don't think that the front office could, just because of how much of a impact that has among the fan base, for a smallish return. And then on the other hand, I can't imagine a player of any value. I mean, honestly, like, I can't imagine, like, Nerlens Noel isn't coming for Tony Allen. Nikola Mirotic isn't coming for Tony Allen type thing. So I have a hard time imagining what other NBA teams are looking at saying, hey, we really need a 35-year-old guy on an expiring contract with bulky knees to come give up something of value for him. So that's where I guess I'm stumped.
Yeah, it would, the structure of the deal would be interesting. I don't know. I would assume that, you know, based on just the profile of the team that would want Tony Allen, it would have to be a contending type team. It would have to be a team that is good, who would want to shore up the defensive side of things a little bit. Those are the types of teams that I would look at. And I think it would make some sense to do it that way. For them, I mean, again, it depends on the team. It depends on all that stuff, but you know, if you are a defensive oriented team, or if you're a team maybe even that just feels like you could use that X factor in matchups that you'd have to go up against, then maybe you consider doing a deal like that. I mean, obviously Philly's not going to do it, because there's no reason for them to have any interest whatsoever in Tony Allen. That's not where they are in their cycle as a team. But if you are, let's say, Cleveland, for example, you know, could you find a way to work Tony Allen into a very potent offensive lineup? Probably, because, you know, you've got a bunch of guys that can score, and you do have matchups out there individually that sometimes you could use a guy like him to shut down an opponent. So if I'm Cleveland, and, you know, you got J.R. Smith, obviously, but I mean, you know, you need a change of pace. You know, you need him to fill the role that he did back in 08 for that Celtics team when he was coming off the bench as that stopper spark plug type guy. You know, can he still do that? You know, maybe if a team feels that they could do that, then maybe they give up something of consequence for him. You know, but the Grizzlies, they would need something. Not only would they want, you know, something of longer term value back for the guy, but I mean, they still consider themselves a contending team. They still have aspirations of not just making the playoffs, but trying to do some damage there. So you can't just, you know, take nothing for the guy. you can't just let that thing go. You have to get something back that's going to help you this year. So I don't know how you structure that deal exactly, but those are the types of teams I'd be looking at.
Yeah, I've been trying to decide how many wins I would trade Tony Allen for. It's a pretty big number. It's like I would rather be 30. I would rather have 37 wins with Tony than 40 without type of thing. But those aren't the decisions that I have to make. Finally, wrapping up, I'm curious, looking back on this era of grit grind, I'm curious, what team do you think was the best of the last, say, six playoff teams? Obviously not last year, so I guess you can pick from the five before that.
Yeah, not last year. That was not going to be my answer. I would say the 12-13, the Western Conference Finals team is still, you know, that was a 56 win team, but I think they got it. They got the balance of it right. I mean, they were that was Mark really at his best defensively. That was, you know, it wasn't always, and well, frankly, often never was it pretty offensively, but I feel like that team really, you know, galvanized in a really fun way. You saw some growth from a lot of different players. You got a little frustrated with Rudy Gay that year, but you know, truth be told, when he kind of dumped out of the equation and you replaced him, that kind of put everybody together and took this thing to a different level. And it wasn't his fault necessarily, but it was an interesting dynamic to watch in real time. That was the birth of Tony Allen in many respects. There were a lot of really cool things about that year. So I think that year overall, just watching the way that it kind of unfolded and that team at the end, you know, yeah, they ran into a juggernaut, but I will never forget seeing the Western Conference Finals in Memphis. I will never forget that run, you know, going to Oklahoma City and covering those games and, you know, seeing how that whole thing kind of happened. It was, that was a special year in many respects. That still to me is the one that tops them all.
Yeah, I really obviously liked that year. I want to say that year, I can't remember the stat, but I want to say in games that Ed Davis played 20 minutes, they were like 19-1, and it wasn't just blowouts. I remember back then being on Twitter, just being like Ed Davis needs to play more. He's only playing 12 minutes a game, and everyone was
there
kinda...
were. See, now here's this is where, like, because I got, you know, from time to time I would get crossways with Ed a little bit. Ed was an interesting character. I liked Ed, but he was a little bit of a sensitive guy sometimes. But Ed just was not a hard worker in practice. And that's what people didn't realize at the time. You know, the coaching staff didn't really have a great deal of trust in Ed Davis because he didn't excel himself in those situations. There was, one particular practice where everyone was working and doing extra stuff except Ed Davis and had to actually be called out by a member of the coaching staff to go and just do the stuff that everyone else was doing. And it's stuff like that happened from time to time that caused his minutes to end up being like, you know, I think he ended up playing like 15 minutes on average, something like that. You know, that's why the minutes, if he's a 23-year-old at the time who, you know, isn't giving you consistent effort out there. Yeah, the advanced numbers were neat. And yeah, there were some things that he did that were really special. But, you know, that stuff that people don't realize behind the scenes, if you wonder why a player doesn't play, sometimes it's stuff like that that really keeps him off the floor.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'll have to have you on another time to give me all the reasons James Johnson never played more. But that's
James Johnson is a character worthy of his own show.
Yeah,
with his mixed martial arts background and neck tattoos and everything else.
Come to think of it, I'm going to get James Johnson on this show. I'm sure we can work that out.
He's a nice guy. Like James is always fun to talk to.
That's great. All right. Well, hey, thanks very much for your time, Peter. Really enjoyed visiting with you. We'll have you on again to talk more Grizzlies. Tell everybody again all the places they should be checking you out.
Okay, so you got to check me out. Follow me on Twitter. That's the number one thing, just because that's where I put all that other stuff out there. At Peter Edmiston. That's Peter EDMISTON. Difficult to spell, but look for it and Google it or whatever, and you'll make it happen. You can listen to the pod, obviously here, of course, Fast Break Breakfast. But if you want to listen to something a little different, then you can go with Locked On Grizzlies. That is coming to your pod manager every day, hopefully Monday through Friday. Although the holidays, it'll be a little weird schedule with the holidays because I got, you know, family stuff, but I'll do the best I can. But mostly daily, and in the other days, it'll be daily. So check that out. Locked On Grizzlies, 7 to 10, Wohl and Peter in the morning on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56, 87.7 FM. You can go to sports56whbq.com. You can stream us live and do all that good stuff. So I think that's pretty much it. You could find me at the local market buying Honeycrisp apples when I'm not doing podcasting.
Well, you can find me online debunking Tony Allen trade rumors.
Go
like
for
they
it.
Were going to trade him for Chase Budinger 2 years ago. Like that ever would have happened.
I mean, listen, man,
that was the last Tony Allen rumor. I have it written on my wall.
I will tell you,
the blasphemy.
There are lots of things that happen and lots of things that almost happen that people would really be quite surprised about. Some deals that are insane that get closer to being done than anyone would imagine.
I believe you there, but I still have some faith in the front office that they would never have gotten Chase Buddy Budinger, as we call him on our show, for Tony Allen. All right, hey Peter, thanks for your time. Have a good night putting your show together.
Absolutely,
we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good one.
All right, see you, buddy.
All right, that was great stuff from Peter Edmonston. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. The rest of you guys, maybe check out our Patreon, patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast. You can support us there, and if you support us, you get access to exclusive content like my weekly Parishioner's Curse power rankings. You also join the Slack chat. We have a pick'em pool that goes every month with new prizes. It is really good stuff, and we appreciate those intrepid souls who have joined us on this journey so far and are supporting us financially. Anyway, you guys are the best. Thanks for listening. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.